Do the death and resurrection of Jesus, who died 2,000 years ago, still have relevance to us today? Welcome again to The Good Word. I'm Brant Berglund, your host and study guide author. We're continuing our 13-week series on the book of Matthew, and really with this lesson, we are concluding our 13-week study. Mm-hmm. My conversation partners throughout this quarter, and again today, are Troy Fitzgerald and Jennifer Ogden, who are pastors of the Walla Walla University Church. This study of Matthew has been enriching for me, and I wish we could spend a lot more time, and especially now, the closing scenes. We have the crucifixion of Jesus. Is the death, the crucifixion of Jesus, still relevant to people? Is this simply a historical event that took place? We could talk all about the actual method of crucifixion. We could talk about the agonizing pain that people went through. We could talk about the differences of how Jesus actually died, not by the usual asphyxiation or lack of ability to breathe, but of a ruptured heart. We could talk about a number of these things, but Jesus ultimately, the Son of God, we found him declared to be in the book of Matthew, the Messiah, the King of Israel, is dead. God in the flesh is dead. Does this hold relevance for us today? And if so, why?
We spoke early this quarter about sin and its weight. You know, just we kind of pansy foot sometimes around the word. We don't say sin. But when you realize that sin, this broken relationship with God between humanity and God, had to be healed, and God was willing to do anything for it, and that included this death on a cross because of my choices. That is a profound experience when I grapple with that personally.
Did you or I, or do you or I, deserve to die by crucifixion? Did Jesus, and maybe this begs the question, did Jesus have to die by crucifixion, or was crucifixion secondary to the death of Jesus? Is there anything to this? Do I deserve a cross?
I don't know. I think there are probably people who experience death there might be a form of execution that causes more suffering than crucifixion. It's possible that there are more cruel ways to end someone's life. I don't think that's really it. I think it's true that the wages of sin is death, then the method by which we die is not as meaningful or as powerful as the reality of what death means.
The finality
death
of it.
Is it? And when we talk about the wages of sin is death, we're not talking about the sleep part. We're talking about the second death. We're talking about the separation, the condemnation. I think that's what is so profound, about that experience.
Mm-hmm. We watch Jesus die, and he doesn't die by crucifixion's normal execution method of asphyxiation. He dies because something is wrong between he and his Father. We hear it in his cries, and it's echoed in the psalm, the 22nd psalm, that is so quoted through Jesus' final words. And what is it about these cries that Jesus utters while on the cross? Father, why have you forsaken me? Mm-hmm. I thirst, and into your hands I commit my spirit. And it is done. It is the Greek words there. It is paid for. It is accomplished. It is all paid up. What's the significance of these short statements on the cross?
Well, I think it speaks to Jesus's experience with sin himself. Right, this is the first real experience he has with sin. He's encountered the effects of it in the people he's ministered to publicly, but now he's
tempted.
Yeah, absolutely, but has never given in to it. And here it is, that weight and that consequence is on him, and he's experiencing it, and that has created something that you and I will never experience. Yeah. Jesus is separated from the source of life, from God.
Or I could experience it, but I can't live forever, can I?
Right, but we can't experience this in the way that Christ does. I think he is shrouded in a way that we are not.
Yeah.
He was born God's son.
Yes.
And I wasn't.
Yeah. And I do think that you know, as you look at him, one of the features of his death that is so compelling to me is that this cry, one of the cries, comes as a form of a question that resonates with a lot of people out there. So, that does kind of beg the notion, does this matter today? Well, I think it does. If you're looking at life and death at this magnitude, Jesus asks the question. Here we see Jesus's humanity and his divinity in one place, because even God has never been at this moment before. Even the, you know, God in heaven has not known this.
This breaking of communion between Father and Son.
And the solution, creating a way. So it is so, you know, we talked earlier about how, you know, our worldview is probably a little off, and how what we know about the Old Testament is not as much as we know in the New. And now in the new Jesus is now so much better than the one of the Old Testament. But even the one we know today, we still don't know.
We see through a glass darkly, right?
And he is asking a question in his final moments.
Father, why have you forsaken? Why? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, he knows why.
Yeah.
He knows that he's chosen from Gethsemane, but all the way through, he's chosen the way of the cross. He avoided certain temptations because he had to go to the cross.
Even Peter's attempt to derail him, he's not going to be dissuaded.
Going in the front gates. Yeah. I'm going to the temple so people get the imagery. I'm going to the cross. Yeah. I lay it down. Nobody takes it from me. This is what I'm doing. But
after Jesus dies, he's placed in the tomb, and it's a Friday night. The Sabbath is kept. The women who come to anoint his body go back home and rest according to the commandment. And they do not, as far as we know, they do not come back to that tomb until Sunday morning. But in the meantime, there is a contingency plan made by the Pharisees to keep the tomb secured, because they had heard the rumors that Jesus would rise again the third day. And they said, the last thing we need is his disciples stealing the body away and pretending he'd been resurrected. So let's make sure and post a guard. But something happens in the night, Saturday night, early Sunday morning, right? Mm-hmm. An angel comes. We read the story, a triumphant ending to this beautiful book of Matthew. Angel rolls away the stone. The guards fall like dead men. And Jesus comes to life. For the Christian world, to what degree is the resurrection an important event? Is it okay that we just believe that it happened? Or is there something important about this event being rooted in time and place, that it was a historical event that we believe such a thing happened?
I think this is the power of our faith. Mm-hmm. This is the powerhouse. Yes, Jesus died. It was a result of sin. He paid the penalty, but the power of God is greater than sin. It is greater than death. It can conquer anything. Anything.
You're getting animated
about
this.
It's so exciting. It's brilliant. It means that what I face today, I do not have to face alone, and I face it with the power of God. That's brilliant.
What can separate us? Now, how can we ever say that before the cross and the resurrection? Yeah. Let's just say we ended on Sabbath and the story closed and Revelation popped in there somewhere. We didn't understand it very much until you write your thing out.
Write my dissertation on
it. That's right.
So what if it ends there? It ends for us, but it doesn't end for us now. Now it continues. And this is the gift of life that God created us for, but now it becomes the bastion. Now this becomes our flag. Now this becomes our moment that allows us to endure anything. Mm-hmm. Oh, so ask the question, is it relevant? What could be more, what on life today is more precious to people than their life?
Yeah. And this is a promise of future life, right? The early church, the New Testament church, took this idea of the resurrection of a crucified Messiah, with them everywhere they went. We read the book of Acts. We read Paul's writings in 1 Corinthians 15. He has a chapter devoted to the idea of the resurrection. But then I read the book of Romans, and Paul does something challenging for me with the idea of resurrection. He says that the power that raised Christ from the dead lives in me now. It's it's not a future promise that if I die, I'll be resurrected, although Paul would agree with that 100%.
Yeah. Yes.
But he says more than that. He says the power of the resurrection is at work in me now.
Yeah.
What does that mean for me? Mm-hmm. What does that mean for our hearers, for our listeners today?
Hmm. For me, it is the notion that that people in this world have a choice. And the choice is to live according to a vision of what life is all about. It's a very narrow, short view, temporary view, my view, or there's something else, or there is another kingdom. I live and work and walk and wonder with people who look at the world that we live in and don't want it anymore. Well, we have a story to tell now. We are part of a story, and this is going somewhere. Believe it or not, but that will be, I mean, that's Matthew's, you know, approach. In the end, it's believe this or not. Life, here's where we get it. Here's how we get it. Here's when we get it, as you cited Paul. There, it's now. I have this life in me. And it's, that's kind of the compelling piece of the Christian faith, isn't it?
Yeah.
This hope?
It is. It's a joyful, abundant life I live today because God resides internally. He is the guiding force. He is the empowering force. And that's a beautiful thing to have.
And if that power that raised Christ from the dead is at work in me, what does that mean for the things that cause death in my spiritual life too? Doesn't that mean that his if he can raise someone from the dead, surely he can deal with the smaller problems in my own life, the struggles I have on a daily basis with my own personality, with the sins that beset me, that resurrection power can overcome those things, right?
Mm-hmm. From the story, it says that he dealt with it. It's dealt with.
It's dealt with.
Yeah.
The Gospel of Matthew concludes with a commission to go out and make disciples of all nations. And I wish we had time to explore that as well. But our time is up for this quarter. We have gone through the book of Matthew from cover to cover, but looking at the high points. And Pastors Jen Ogden and Troy Fitzgerald, thank you both for being with me this quarter.
Thanks, Brant.
I'm Brant Berglund, and I've been your host and your study guide author. And my thanks to David Olson and Jared Miller, who have been our program engineers throughout. And to all of you who have been listening in, thank you for joining us. And I hope you'll continue your study of the Gospel of Matthew and the rest of Scripture. Thank you again for the good word. I'm Brant Berglund.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.